Alrighty, talking about the resurrecting of the beast of Revelation part 2. So I'm going to tell you today that there's a lot of historical information, maybe a little more technical. If you're new to studies or you're new to prophecy and you haven't covered a lot of this, that's okay. You know, hopefully you can take some time and do some Bible study. In fact, I'm going to show you a list, and for everyone here, in case you came in late, is this was a list of Babylon, of the dynasties, the kingdoms, Daniel, all the way through to Revelation, that the church has had for many years. I simply got that and printed a copy. So they got plenty of them out on the table out there. If you need extra, if you want to take a couple extra, I also printed you all here locally the 11 by 17s, in case you want to make notes and do some study and research there. For those who are tuning in, who follow us online, we also have a page with the link. So if you go to the Resurrecting the Beast, you'll find, I think, in News Nuggets and Insights on the email alert we sent out, on the email for News Nuggets and Insights, there is a link. You can click on it, and you can print you out a PDF. Okay, and you make one for the website also. So I wanted to get everybody to give you a little bit of homework. But here's, I'm going to tell you, as I go through, is that it's not critical to have to understand all the dynamics of what's going through there as far as salvation goes. It's great to have, but I tell you what's so important for you and I in the church. As a ministry, we have to be able to teach what God has given to us, to document what God is doing. And that's why it's important for me to tell you what I'm explaining here. So, let's get into it, and I'll go a little bit more into that as we get into it. Everything here in the sermon and three-part series that I'm doing revolves around basically this one scripture bringing us to where we are today. And I saw, as it were, one of it said, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and the world wondered after the beast. Now, when you read that, you need to understand that there's always the former, the latter, the physical, spiritual. This has already taken place in the physical, in the former, which I'll show you today. But see, there's another time coming that this beast is coming out, being resurrected again. Because remember, God says in the beast of the woman who rides the scarlet beast, all right, seven, it has seven heads, right? Five are past, one is, and one is yet to come. One is yet to come is the period that we're going to work into resurrecting that beast. The one is yet to come. I believe we can document that we are that stage right now, or we at the beginning, or where it's just about to take place. And that ought to be terrifying and exciting all at the same time for you and I. That means God's getting ready to bring this thing to a halt. You know, I had an email came in just yesterday for our News Nuggets and Insights from a gentleman, and I apologize if sometimes the News Nuggets and Insights gets a little too graphic, precise. And I try not to go over the edge, and I'm not trying to bring this out to sensationalize anything. But the person brought out, and I wanted to, and it keeps me on balance. He says, you know, it was so disgusting. He says, I feel like I'm going to throw up. I turned it off. You know, I certainly don't want to see anybody turn off News Nuggets and Insights. It's really important. And I thought about that, and you know, to some degree, he's right. So you wait, do you not say what has to be said or what? I said, well, there's a balance what has to be said. For example, next week, I've got a video. I've edited out half of it. It's two trans, a woman who decided to be the man and a man decided to be the woman married. And having a baby. And the man who is now the woman is trying to nurse the babies and upset they can't produce milk. It's like, this is unbelievable. I said, you know, take it up with God. I mean, he's the one who created us. And I was like, so now I'm saying, do I bring that video out? And I weighed it out because it was disgusting. I was going to throw up. So, pray about that. I got to Tuesday to decide whether to do it or not. But I mean, this is crazy. This whole world. But the point of last week wasn't to disgust anybody. It's because if you haven't seen it yet, you need to understand what's going on there. It's the stuff that grown-ups say, I don't want to hear this. They're teaching it to your kids and your grandkids. That's the reason for bringing this out. And if you don't tell people, they don't know this is going on. But the stuff that they're doing in the schools, they're teaching the kids 5 years old, 4 years old, all the way through to high school. And so do you not say anything about that? You know, so I believe we need to. And it needs to be a balance, you know, and we're not going to try to disgust everybody, but, you know, it's disgusting. You know, because that's what goes to God's throne. He says he's coming down, and he's angry, and he's going to destroy this planet. Unless there's repentance. And except for people like you and I doing what we're doing, there would be no saving of this earth. So that's why it's so important. So, you know, I go in there with a heavy heart every week, and I tell you what, by the time it's finished, when I go home on a Tuesday, I am emotionally, spiritually drained. And this crew will tell you, when we sit at that table, when we finish with it, I said, listen, I'm sorry, I'm brain dead. Because it wears on your soul. Remember what it's talked about with Lot? It says there's war in his soul daily. When you have to deal with this stuff, it wears on your soul. And so you got to go to God constantly and be replenished. Now, with all that said, getting into this, I'm not deterring from this, and I probably took a little more time than I needed, but I wanted to share that with you, that we take seriously what we're doing and we're trying to keep a balance into it, and to not sensationalize, you know, not, you know, blow things out of proportion, but really be a balance as best we can. Sometimes we get them wrong. We get them wrong, while make a correction, but most of the time we try to give those correct. So now, we're moving into this time period. When you hit this time period in the latter, in the spiritual, you're very close to the end. Because it says when that seventh has come, it comes for a very short time. And it seems to connect the 3.5 years to that same period of time. So now, we're going through that. So now, let me just give you a couple of slides here in a review, in case you missed part one. We're covering this in three parts. Point of origin was tracking the beast through history. Right, that's where we started, into the beast. We're going to finish that through today. Today we'll bring out that point of time, the point of time bringing us to today. We'll go through history with the beast. We'll tie in Daniel 2, Daniel 7, actually Daniel 8, part of Daniel 8, Revelation 13 and 17, tying them all in together. Now, that's what this chart's all about. When you get into the chart, it can be very confusing if you have not studied this before. That's why you would just take your time when you're at home and do some Bible study. In fact, I would love to, guys, here, if we can do this maybe after the feast, is if I can get enough time, I'd like to take from that Bible study you're doing in here to bring this in here in graphics and do a multi-part Bible study. And I don't know if I can get the time in to do that, but I think it needs to be said and needs to be done. Might even live stream that. I don't know if we can get that done. Then next time I'm going to bring in Point of Destiny, tracking the beast in prophecy. That'll take us to where we lead up to today and into what's supposed to be fulfilled. Then we get into all the current events and the historical documentation for today. Because things are lining up fast. I mean, a lot faster than we ever dreamed they would be lined up. So now, we're told through these points is that there are, in the beast of Revelation, that there are two primary beasts, or two primary persons. We're told that through the prophet Daniel and the apostle John. Daniel gives us the beast looking backwards through the history of the development of time. So as we go through Daniel, we're looking back at him. Then we get it from John. John is looking forward. So actually, if you notice that it starts with the head of Babylon, then it goes through the different nations. John gives it in the reverse order. So they're looking at it from two perspectives, which is ever closest to them. All right, and is the form of the beast at the end time that the church has taught throughout the decades. So what we didn't have was the information of the beast coming together to reach the accomplished state. In other words, we didn't have all the pieces that was putting it together at the end through the historical documentation that we can do today. And in 10 years, you're going to put a whole lot more into that documentation. So now, we also talked about covering the two aspects of the beast. So first was, what is the beast? What was important to understand, who is the beast? That's important for us to understand. And we're talking about the resurrecting of the beast, which is in the part of Revelation. All right, that's the importance of the timing of the beast of Revelation. That's where we're at. The thing is, Revelation just doesn't give you a beast, it gives you two beasts. Right? In Revelation 13, you see there's two beasts. Revelation also gives us the control of who is the power that rides the beast. And that's very, very important, understanding who the woman of the beast is. And so you get into Revelation 17, that beast, all right, is a part of the beast of 13. and I'll show you all that through. And I've got a lot of graphics today, a lot of pictures and moving things around, because what I tried to do is take the complication of this to simplify. And hopefully I got it simplified enough through the pictures and the movements of what is important to try to understand today. So that's what I did. I've done a lot of work into this particular one to do a lot of pictures. All right, so here's our three parts. So now we're going to get in through this. We're going to talk today, the second part of tracking the beast to today. We're going to cover it in two ways. All right, I'm going to cover it in two ways. First, the purpose that God has left all this information for us. That's what's important. That's what's critical. If you don't understand and you can't keep up with the tracking of all the different beasts, which horn is this and which kingdom is that, that can come in time. And believe me, everybody goes through that, especially if you're just beginning to study prophecy and putting all these things together in the beast and who Babylon really is. Theologians today get them all screwed up. Every time you turn around, somebody's got a new Babylon. Well, this is Babylon. This is Babylon. And I'm going to show you today why that confusion comes about. This is what's important, is the purpose that God left it for us. Two, the biblical and historical tracking of the beast of Daniel till today. That's not as critical. That's not as critical. However, it is critical for me to you. See, I need to give you this information so that even if you don't understand it all now and put it all together, you will. The reason it's critical for me to give to you is because God has gone out of his way to put this documentation for the end time generation. Remember what God told Daniel? He said, Daniel, listen, write it all down. You won't know what you're writing, he told him. Go your way. It's not for you to know. So God not only put all this together, documenting all these historical kings or rulers and dynasties, he also put it together in a time frame. And not just that, he had to do it before he recreated the earth, because it all ties in with the moons, the sun, and the stars. So all of that is put into place, all coming together. And then he took two incredible, dynamic people, Daniel and the Apostle John, and recorded for us. Then you have all the what I call the supplemental prophets who put the pieces in together to explain what it is they're doing. So if it's that important to God, it's important for us to be able to document to you why and what went on and how he got it accomplished. It's phenomenal. I mean, when you think that and God gives us that information, that ought to be reassuring and be re-comforting for us, because you see, when all this stuff begins to go down, there are going to be times that you're going to feel abandoned, but you're not. What God does, though, is he gives you time to strengthen yourself, to draw to him. Remember Elijah? God wasn't in a thunder, the clapping, the rain, the tornado. He was in the quiet. And that's where Elijah found God again. And that's where it's going to be with you and I. So let me cover first here, then I'll get into the second part. There's the list, and I put it here so that anybody who can't get to the internet, and they may get a DVD, they can freeze it, and you can print this little frame piece out, and you can freeze your DVD, and you can catch it, and you'll see it as it goes across, like here. Let me show you. The image of the beast in Daniel 2, it connects to the beast, the four beasts in Daniel 7. Then you have what's called the beast of the sea and the earth, as Revelation 13. The harlot riding the beast in 17. The symbolic meaning and the historical fulfillment. All right, so you got all these things coming together. So now, as you go down the chart, let me give you one more box or maybe two. These showing you in the chart how they all connect one book to the other. You see that where the belly, the thigh, and bronze was the four-headed leopard. And all these things begin to make sense when you can put them together. Because in the New Testament, you'll see that they talk about a beast, or in Daniel it says, and it flew across the earth like it didn't touch the earth. Well, in the beast in symbolic terms, you've got a leopard with four wings. You know, when you begin to understand who the king of the dynasty is, it moved very fast, like it didn't touch the earth. Let me give you one more box toward the end. Let me show you down toward the bottom of that page. So you have the ninth horn, which is the sixth of the last seven horns, which is the sixth head of the harlot. So you begin to say, well, wait a minute. What is all of that? So you got to figure out how these pieces all come together. And I'll tell you the truth, when I first started doing it, I said, man, I don't understand this stuff. And I just put it aside. I did, because it was confusing to me. You know, when I first started being able to do some of these studies. So now, let's begin with the purpose. All right, this is the easy part. This is the part that you want for salvation. The easy part. Revelation has the 12 signs in heaven. It says, and the great dagger was cast out, the old serpent called the devil and Satan, which went out to deceive the whole world, and he was cast out to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and you that dwell in them, and woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows he has but a short time. So why is God giving us all this information? Because of this. Right there. If you don't want to understand about the beast and what it's important, why it's what it's doing, it's coming to get you. That's the bottom line here. So what God's saying, listen, I'm telling you, this thing, this beast that the whole world wonders about, who's great in amazement, who can make war with this beast, and people listen to these ministers like, grab the devil and I wrap him around my arm and I threw him out the window. Hogwash. This beast, read Acts. Remember when he was pretending he was like a Paul or an Apollos or whatever? And the demon said, I don't know who you are. We know Paul. But he grabbed him and took him out and sent him out there with naked running down the street. Believe me, you don't want to face Satan by yourself. But God's telling you, he's coming after you. It says he's going out to make war on the inhabitants of the earth, and particularly the elect. Verse 17, same chapter. The dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed. I was talking to a gentleman right before church, talking about the possibility of baptism and the difficulties and the things we're going through. And I told him, I said, listen, whether people realize it or not, what's coming is going to come on everybody, whether they believe it or they don't. You don't want to go into that without being protected. In other words, God's offering you protection. You know, he's offering you eternal life. What's more important than that? So now, God went to such great lengths to record all of that for us. Look at Revelation 13. The beast is resurrected. And I saw his heads as it were wounded to death, and the deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the beast, which gave power to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like this beast? Who is able to make war with him, God says. So they cried with a mighty voice, with a strong voice, saying, Babylon, Babylon is great. I went right into Revelation 18 from where we were. Why? Because Babylon's going to fall. Babylon is going to fall. We need to understand that. It's only going to be for a short time that these things are going to begin to take place. Is fallen, for all nations of the earth have drunk of her wine, the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth had committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And I heard another voice saying, come out of her, my people. Now, really, what does the world have to offer you? Think about that. What does it really have? You're going to have to want riches of this world. You want to have the delicacies of this world rather than an eternity with God. Is that really what people want? But I'm telling you something. If you're listening or somebody's tuning into this, or you're sharing this with a family member, and God's opened up your mind, God's telling you, you've got a chance for eternity. You have a chance to be with your elder brother, Jesus Christ, and our Father, who's going to come with a new heaven and a new earth, who's going to come back to this planet. You got to focus on that. In other words, you got to be willing to let go everything there is here. And if you can do that, there's nothing they can do to hurt you. You know, and there's a scripture that actually says that. What can they do to me? Because if they take your life, they've given you eternity. Whether you realize it or not, they've just done you a favor. And when you can see that, that's when the apostles, when they were beaten, they went out rejoicing. They said, wow, we're getting closer to the kingdom. Don't seek to save your life. It won't do you any good. You're going to lose it in the long run. And isn't it worth it for your family and your kids and your friends? If you can hold fast, even if they mock you now, that maybe when it begins to happen, they're going to say, wait a minute, I know somebody who is doing these things, and they're going to look for you. You're getting a chance to not only just save your life, through God, through Jesus Christ, but maybe save your family and friends, giving them an opportunity. It says, for her sins have reached unto heaven. I wanted to show you something here, because it reached unto heaven. It reminded me of Genesis 15. He says, but in the fourth generation, this is talking about the commitment that God had with Abraham when they had the covenant with Abraham. He says, you know, I'm going to build a family and a nation among you. And through you and all your family, you're going to be blessed. Remember that? Look what it says yet. But in the fourth generation, they shall come here again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. In other words, God's given this earth a chance to repent. I think that chance began in 2015. It could be 2022, it stops, and things begin to happen. I don't know. But when I've said that now for years and years and years, many times it's come to pass. And, you know, when you look at the 7 years and you look at the Shemitahs and the beginning of the blood moons and you look at all the things that God's blessed us to be able to teach in the last 7 years, it has meaning that sometime next year, that 7 year period that God's given us for this nation to repent has not. It's only gotten worse. Also look in Genesis 18, verse 20. So the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, he says, I will now go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it. In other words, what's going on now, even if you think God's not listening, and this world thinks there is no God and he's not listening, if there is one, he is. And these cries are going to heaven. And it's going to reach a time when the Father tells over to Christ who's on his right hand and says, look, that's enough. Bring it to an end. And that's going to happen. And God will step in. And that's one of the reasons why, the primary reason why, the purpose of this information and understanding Babylon is critical. That is the key to what's going on. So now, let's begin to look at part two. Daniel says, O king, and behold, let's begin to look at the second purpose of part two. Now we're going to begin to go through the documentation and historical information. O king, behold a great image, and a great image whose brightness was excellent. He stood before you in the form that was terrible. And the image's head was of fine gold. All right, the fine gold of the head. And this is part of the easiest point to understand in the teaching of Babylon, who Babylon is. Notice, this is the head of Babylon. But remember, all of this is incorporated into becoming Babylon. And that's what Rome does. It incorporates everything and it becomes a system. It's not one nation. All right, so now, the whole system, everything built in from that time on becomes Babylon. Not because you'll hear people say, well, ISIS was Babylon, and it was America's Babylon, and Russia was Babylon, and then China's Babylon. So everybody picks at the particular time who's in power and control and created the problems. Oh, that's Babylon. No, the whole thing. The whole thing is Babylon. It's all incorporated into one. That's why it's such a terrible beast. All right, the breast and his arms are silver. All right, breast and arms are silver. All right, that's Persia. All right, then you go on to belly and thighs are brass. It goes through. That's Greece. Then, of course, the legs of iron, port iron. Port clay on his feet, that of course is Rome. And those are the given years of the dynasties of these nations. All right, so that's coming from Daniel 2. All right, that starts the whole thing. Now, Daniel 7. All right, so Daniel 7. Daniel 7 is a reinforcement of Daniel 2. But now instead of looking at the kingdoms, what Daniel 7 gives you is the power of the kingdoms. And it relates to the power of the kingdoms to animals or to beasts. And so, same thing. But now we're talking about not just the kingdom. Now we're talking about their strengths. All right, the first one is the lion. The head of the lion had eagle's wings. The second being Persia. It's actually Medo-Persia. The Medo-Persia, because you'll see it's the two sides. Is another beast, which is the second, is likened to a bear, and it had three ribs in its mouth, which you come later taking out three horns, as you'll see later. All right, Daniel 7:6 says, is the leopard. Daniel 6 being the leopard, upon the head and back, had four wings of a fowl. It also had four heads. All right, it has four heads. Then Daniel 7 is a beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. All right, this is the one that we'll spend most of our time on toward the end of this and next week when we get to that. So, all right, so that's what we have now with Daniel 7 and Daniel 2. Now, what's interesting here is that now we begin to tie in Revelation 13 to those same creatures. So I like this image here. This, if you go on the internet, you'll find this. Many artists have done their own renditions of what they think it looks like. Now, I'd love for us to be able, if anybody's an artist, that you can create us another one for we can use for our church that becomes our symbol in our work. But it takes a lot of. You got to know what you're doing to do all that to really do a professional look. But anyway, let's take a look at this. Revelation 13 says, I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his ten horns were ten crowns. Now it begins to get a little more complicated. So now it's like, what in the world are we looking at? But what you're actually looking at here is this and this. Now it's beginning to define the kings within those periods of time and their dynasties as they go through time. That's what, see now John is bringing Daniel forward. So we see, remember, Daniel looked back, John looks forward. So Revelation 13 picks up where Daniel basically leaves off. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet was like feet of a bear, and his mouth was the mouth of a lion. All right, that's always the head is always shown as the lion. So now we have this beast of Revelation 13, and it has seven heads, ten horns, ten crowns. One head is the lion. Second head is the bear. 3, 4, 5, and 6 is the head of a leopard. It's also the body of a leopard. Remember, the leopard had four wings, and you'll see that this is the Greek, the Greece, and you'll remember the Alexander the Great, how powerful he was and how fast he moved. All right, so we'll show you that in just a second. So there's six of the heads, and then there's the ugly one. Now even Daniel said, man, that's a beast. Man, that's seven one. He's different from everything. And that's what you're looking at the end time. You're looking at a beast that is different from anything the world has ever known. All coming together. So the beast that I saw was like this leopard. His feet were like that of a bear. His mouth was that of a lion. So now the seventh. All right, the seventh head. We bring out here. The seventh head, if you don't get all the other pieces together, understand this. Of the beast of Revelation 13, of which you have seven heads, the seventh head is the same beast as Revelation 17. It's the same one. Everything else could be gone, and at the end time when you're looking at one more beast, which is the seventh head. All right, you have the seventh head. That is the beast of Revelation 17. The woman rides the beast, remember? It's a scarlet-covered beast. What the Bible is trying to tell us, and the point you need to remember, is the woman is referring to as the church. The reason it's scarlet, when you understand, is the Roman church. Their color is scarlet. Throughout history in the dynasties, you will see there's two things come into play. The Catholic Church and the German nation at the end time. They're Germanic all the way through. You go through these things. But it isn't until this beast that the Catholic Church rides the civilian government in authority. So the Rome gets its authority from the Pope. Everything goes down to the seventh beast. But now, let's go through that a little bit here. Sorry, now, so here we have the entire system is Babylon. So when you hear somebody say, oh, the United States is Babylon, yes, we're a part of it. Europe's Babylon, yes, they're a part of it. The whole world is Babylon. It's the entire system because it encompasses the entire world. That's Babylon. And God says, come out of her, my people. For example, if it was the United States and you lived in Europe, you wouldn't have to come out of the United States. You're already over in Europe. See, it makes no sense. Come out of her, my people. But God's people are around the world. They have to come out of the system that is around the world. That's why you have a one world rulership, not one world governments. They're all going to be tied into a one group, all agreeing to work together. The heads of Revelation 13. All right, let's take a look. That's Babylon, right? So there's your head. Revelation 13:5 said, there was given to him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And he opened his mouth and blasphemed against God and to blaspheme his name. It was given him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. So the end time Babylon is going to have a speaking person, an antichrist, the man of sin. You're also going to have the Pope. And the Pope's going to be the guy who comes out speaking blasphemies against God. This Pope's already doing that, by the way. Because he's doing away with Christ, he's making things more civil for the whole world to get along. So now, the Medo-Persian, the second, the bear. All right, so here we have the second in the bear, pulling us in again, Daniel 7 and verse 5. So he has the paws, his strength, and he has two horns being Medo-Persian. What's interesting is that Daniel 8 gives us, we don't have to interpret who this is, because Daniel 8 tells us, and because he tells us who this is, and the next head, it ties everything and makes it real simple to try to follow through history. From Daniel 7:5 is also being interpreted and given to us in Daniel 8, verse 3 and verse 20. Verse 3. So I lifted up my eyes, and I saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns. And the two horns were high, one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. The Medo-Persian Empire all worked together. One came in earlier, one came in later. One stronger, one weaker. Now look at verse 20. It tells us, the ram which you saw having two horns are the kings of Media, of Medo, and Persia. So we don't have to guess who they are. Daniel told us who they are. See, that's in Daniel chapter 8, verse 20. So we know that comes after Babylon, we come to Medo-Persian Empire, and we're told who they are. He also tells us who the next one is. Now watch. Greece. So here we have Greece, which is the thighs of brass, which is Greece. And you have the four wings and the four heads. This is the Hellenistic Empire, Alexander the Great, and its four divisions after his death. See, he comes out first. He's the like the strong horn, and then he dies. In the Greeks, or the Hellenistic Empire, is broken into four kingdoms of four generals who rule that same dynasty. They're all a part of Greece. So, and that's your four heads. Your three, four, five, and six of the heads. How do we know that? Here, there's three, four, five, and six. All right, so that we know is Greece. The one horn's gone, the four horns replace it, they're all Greece. We know this because Daniel tells us. Look what it says. In 6, the leopard which had the four wings of a fowl also had four heads. Daniel 8 explains who they are. Daniel 8, verse 5. And as I was considering, behold, a he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and he touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. So now you got the four wings, so it didn't touch the ground. Why? Because Alexander the Great, he has moved so fast. There's nobody could. I mean, he was the original Blitzkrieg. He was the original Blitzkrieg. Had the notable horn between his eyes. Now look at verse 21 and 22. Now you go back and you read Daniel 8, and you can read verses 5 through 8, and then you can pick up again to 21 and 22. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, being the four generals, or four kingdoms that shall stand out of the earth, but not in his power. In other words, they still have a power as Greece, But they don't have the same strength that Alexander had. But they still had strength. They're just four different kingdoms. So Daniel actually tells us, going through, where we're at. He names that who they basically are as far as the kingdoms go. So that makes it really simple to try to keep together up until this stage of where we are. So now, let's get to 7. Keep an eye on my time, because I don't want to rush too much at the very end. All right, so 7. All right, 7 are the legs of feet of iron and clay and Rome. I'm showing you things coming together toward the very, very end. All right, so the 7 head horns on this beast are not the same as you saw in Daniel, because what you're looking at, these are going to be 4 kings at the end time. Because you see, this head is the head of Revelation 17. That happens at the end time. So they don't come to play until after everything of all the beasts are gone, and you're down to the very last one of the head of that final beast. Daniel 7:7 says, "The fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured, broke into pieces, stamped in the residue with his feet of it, and with the diverse of all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns." So what this beast does, it takes all the strengths of all the nations and kingdoms that went before it, it grabs all the strengths, destroys the rest, and now it morphed into this incredible, powerful beast with all the strengths of all the world that went before it. That's Satan at the end time coming in. All right, in tight. So now, we have the seventh head. The seventh head is what Revelation 17 is. So look what Daniel says. "And I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn. And before whom 3 of the first horns were plucked by its roots, and behold, the horn of its eyes with the eyes of the mouth speaking great things." All right, so here we have that little horn coming up. It destroys 3 of the kingdoms, puts things together, and begins speaking his blasphemies. And I'll show you who that is in just a few minutes. The 7 horns that are left, there's the 7 kingdoms that are left, on the 7th head of the 4th beast, are the same as the 7 heads of the scarlet beast of Revelation 17:3. So when you look at Revelation 17:3, it shows you with 7 heads. See, that's 7 of these horns. 3 are gone, 3 are yet to come. I mean, 7 are yet to come. When you begin with Revelation 17. "And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-covered beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns." See, the 10 horns of the beast of Revelation 17, those are the ones at the very end time come together. They don't have a kingdom yet. So you begin to realize that the beast, these horns, they're separate from the one you're going to see in 17. That's why you need to back and study some of your charts. So now, let's look at the development of the beast in Revelation 17. Because that's what's important. So you can go through all of those things. What that does is give you a breakdown in history where they're at. In the chart, you'll find out the times and years and the dynasties in each one of them you can begin to put together of those beasts. So now, the legs and the feet of Daniel 2 is the continuation of Rome. The fourth beast of Daniel 7 is also the continuation of Rome. The seventh head of Revelation 13 is also the continuation of Rome. Look what it says. "And I saw of his head that was wounded to death, and his wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast." So this is Rome coming back together. It's going to be injured. It's going to come back. 4:7, 6:7, wounded as it were to death. 5:54, healed. I'm going to show you the importance of those events. Now, 4:67 is in question. And I'll tell you that now. Some would go as early as 5:34. Some go as early as 3:25, believe it or not. But this is the time when finally Rome loses its power. All right? The Germanic tribes coming in, those 3 little horns that you heard, and they removed. They were coming in and they actually took Rome down. But they governed it and began to govern as Rome. So it was like it was dead, but it comes back to life. This is the final period where the Ostrogoths were moved. I'm going to show you those kingdoms in just a second. They're moved out. Rome takes control. From that time on, Rome rules with the Pope and church and state together. That's what's critical. That's why this date is very, very important. And I'll show you that. From 429 to 454, and this is why I'm telling you here, 467, people will question it. And that's fine. You can do that in history. I mean, you don't have to lock anything in on that when they actually lost their power. From 429 to 554, the first of the three horns of Revelation are removed. There's three horns. They're all tied together. Every one are tied in to the Germanic people, believe it or not. At the end time, it's why we think the German people, again, is going to be involved in all of this. First, of the three kingdoms, those three horns that are removed, the kingdom of the Vandals, 429 to 533, the kingdom of the Heruli, 476 to 496, and this is why they use 476 here, is because, see, they thought it was going here, and they are in total control by this dynasty. And then finally, the kingdom of the Ostrogoths from 493 to 554. Those three kingdoms all come out of Germanic backgrounds, all governing and ruling in different parts of the Roman Empire, all running as Romans. All running as Romans. By this time, all of these are removed. They're conquered, they're kicked out of Rome. By 554. The first three horns are removed. The seven that are left, those seven are left, begin the development of the beast of Revelation chapter 17. So they just got rid of those. Remember, there was 10 horns. Three are gone, seven left. Where the seven? The seven come into the beast now of Revelation 17. So what we're doing here, we're developing the scarlet beast of Revelation 17. Because remember, in 13, it has 10 horns. Now the 10 horns become the seven heads. Because there's only seven horns left. Each seven becomes a head in Revelation. Now, doesn't that make it all plain? It will. If it isn't plain to you right now, it will. You keep studying it. All three were Germanic. This is why God has recorded for us to understand what's coming, because we need to know what's coming. They were Germanic. Interesting, there'd be three waves of Germany in world wars. Two's already passed, one's yet to come. Coming together. Now, let's read what it says. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads, or seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now we're getting specifics about that scarlet beast. This is what's important for you and I. If you didn't know any of the rest, you don't have to. You know, it's not critical you understand that. It's critical to understand why God's called you and what's coming. You don't have to know the document and the history of all of that stuff. I like that. So to me, it's important to understand. I couldn't teach this to you if I didn't have that in my head to be able to do this. So now we're going to understand we're putting together this beast. The seven heads, or the seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are seven heads. Five are fallen, one is, and one is not yet come. It's interesting when God tells us this, and he tells us that for a reason. Why did he lump five, and then one and one yet? I'll show you that today, too. And the beast that was and is not is even the eighth and is of the seventh and goes into perdition. Now, what this is telling us, when that seventh head comes to power, that final beast power, there could be the eighth, which means, if the Rome's in charge, bringing up that beast of resurrection, which it is, it's telling us that there may be another pope coming. Or another man of sin. The eighth of the seventh. See, the eighth is of the seventh. So if the dynasty is in place, if the kingdom's in rulership, and one person dies, someone fills in that position, the eighth is part of the seventh. So that's when you hear people say they think there might be another pope. this is where it's coming from. Okay. The ten horns which you saw are also ten kings, which have received no kingdom yet, but have received the kings of 1 hour, in which is the beast. Now, this is where the church has come up with the United Nations of Europe that they have taught for decades, that there would be ten nations in the United Nation at the end time. It's these people who are going to be given power, but not a kingdom. They haven't been given a kingdom yet, but they're going to be given power for a short period of time. Just recently, we've seen that there's a movement underfoot in the EU. The people do not want it to become a super state. So they're breaking up. So there's like 17 or 18 countries said, no, we don't want to be a super state. And there are 10 that do. It's interesting that the EU could break apart and have 10 strong nations running EU. This is where the church has got that information from. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings. They're the final connection, which are the 10 toes of Daniel 2. So remember, we started off with Babylon, all the way down to Rome, then you have clay in the 10 toes, poured iron, poured clay. Remember, they don't mix well. So when you look at the EU, what the church understands to be the EU and these final 10 toes, they don't mix well right now. They've been trying to mix now for decades, and they can't get together. So they'll have power for a little while, but they have no kingdom. All right, so that's bringing it all the way down into the final stage when you look at the ten horns of Revelation 17. Here's the mind of the seven heads which the woman sits. Let's cover that for just a second. So I've got this I wanted to bring out. The seven mountains on palm where the woman sits. So now I'm recommending that you go back into online. You can get it. Is the Holy Roman Revival, Part 2. We go into great detail on the woman. I'll cover some more next week, but I didn't want to take the time today. So that's in the Holy Roman Revival. I'm going to spend a lot of detail in Part 2 of the Holy Roman Revival. Now, let's not forget that the seven mountains, there are also seven kings. Seven kings, it says. There are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is, and the other is yet to come. And when he comes, he must continue for a short space. It's interesting, it doesn't tell us the short space, but Daniel tells us a little bit. Matthew 24 tells us a little bit. Revelation tells us a little bit. 3.5 years. Time, times, and a half time. 1,260 days. What's interesting is, embedded in God's prophetic word is a day as a year. There's also a day as a thousand years. But watch how all this comes together now to talk about where we're at. So let's not forget the seven mountains. Let's take a look at the seven mountains. And here's the mind which has wisdom, the seven heads on the seven mountains which the woman sits. Rome is the only church that has what's called the city of seven hills. So when you look at the definition of what the Bible talks about with Rome, you also see in part it fulfills the physical typology of Revelation 17. The seven hills or the seven mountains of when the church sits, which is Rome. There's no other church on the face of the earth that fulfills that prophecy. The historical site on Rome, the seven hills, was occupied as early as the Bronze Age, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. So this goes all the way back at the very beginning, this location. Now, let's track the heads. The first head of the Scarlet Beast. Again, I'm just going to give you some historical documentation here. Okay? The historical documentation of the first head of the seven heads of Revelation 17. Remember, now we're all in that last beast, the Scarlet Beast in Revelation 17. The first head, the imperial restoration of the West with Constantinople under Justinian. He created the Justinian law. That's critical to understand why that's important, because let me just read you the part of the first, or actually the second paragraph. It says, we order all of those who follow this law to assume the name of Catholic Christians. Let me read it again. We order all of those who follow this law to assume the name of Catholic Christians. And considering others as demented and insane. It's a law. He's the guy who defeated the Ostrogoths, moved all three of those dynasties out, were all Germanic. The three horns that are removed, this is the guy who did it. When would he finally remove? 554. At that time was the first time that the church and state merged to run the entire dynasty of Rome. Constantine brought in the church, but it wasn't ruling. For the first time now, the Pope will begin to rule his dynasty on the throne under the authority of Justinian. Later, the Pope rules, and the civil law is subservient to the Pope. All right? Now, I can go on and read this. The big thing that comes out here, this specifically goes after Sabbath keepers. Now, that's important to understand when you understand the 1260 days and years. So now, the second head is the Carolingian Empire, which means Charlemagne, who was crowned in 800 AD on Christmas Day, by the way, December 25th, the second dynasty that began its rulership. That's the second head of the beast. The third head of the scarlet beast, the Holy Roman Empire under Otto the Great, who was crowned in 962. And he ruled in his dynasty. The fourth head of the beast is the Habsburg dynasty, which is Charles V, who was crowned in 1530 AD. Now, I brought this crest up to show you. Doesn't that look dramatic? A lot of what Hitler brought together, bringing it. So when you've looked at all of these dynasties together, they all go back to the Assyrian dynasty. The Assyrians who removed Israel, remember? They're still around. They're the Germanic tribes. What's interesting is the Habsburg dynasty is part of the Napoleon dynasty. All right? So now, all of these things go together. Now we come to the fifth head, which puzzled me for the longest. It's like, why do you have all these Germanic heads? And then you get to this one, Napoleon, and it's France. He was ordered to marry the Habsburg dynasty to keep the dynasty going. He married into the Germanic dynasty and had a son. All right, so Napoleon. This is the famous picture of Napoleon who he actually deposed the Pope. Removed him from his throne. He became the guy in charge. He demanded the Pope come to him to crown him. And when he wouldn't kneel, he took the crown and he crowned himself. He wasn't going to kneel before any Pope. He said he was not going to have anybody. He was the great and he was going to do it himself. But the dynasty continued through the Habsburg of what God had intended. This is very important for the sixth and the seventh. Now, this is the first five, right? So now we have the first five of the, remember, five have gone. One is and one is yet to come, remember? So here's the five. So why did God put it this way? Let me show you something. Justinian begins to take power in 554 when his dynasty was basically began being complete and when the other nations were kicked out. Napoleon's empire is completed by 1814. Daniel 27:25 says, they shall be given into his hand for time, times, and the dividing of time. What does that got to do with these two dates? Let me show you. Bear with me. Revelation 12, remember the woman fled into the wilderness where she was prepared of God that she should flee there for 1,203 score days. So we're talking about basically the same thing. 260 days, 260 years. So now, remember, prophetic day is a year or embedded in God's prophecies. Because remember, we got the prophets where God says, look, lay on your side for this many days, it'll be that many years. Remember the story with the prophets. Also, there's always the former and the latter, the physical and the spiritual. If you keep that in mind when you're studying prophecy, you'll be able to go back and pull these pieces together. So now, let's take a look at it from the timeline from 2015 in the Holy Roman Revival. I try to timestamp everything by color, by code, and by name. So when I've seen this, you know it's red, you're in the Holy Roman Revival. So you'll know that where I pull it from. That way I don't change the slides. Everything's still the same. When you go back, it's exactly the same. So now, look at remember those two dates? Originally, Rome defeated the Ostrogoths in 538. To 1798, the papacy is removed as the authority. That's 1,260 years. But remember now, we got 554 in 1814. Let's do that. The Ostrogoths are removed in 554. They're defeated. He didn't get them out of the kingdoms until a few years later, 554, when they're finally gone, and he is able to merge everything, including Constantinople, and Rome now comes to power. It's all kind of uniting. So if you go 1,260 years, where does it go to? 1814. When's the end of the Napoleon reign? 1814. 1,260 years. Why is that important, 1,260 days, 1,260 years? Remember, Justinian law. So God had a place for his people. So between here and here, here you had the Constitution of the United States established. So while there was no law to protect God's people, God hid them, brought them to the place that he promised, until he established a way to protect him, and God's people were protected. And Rome was gone. At the end time, Rome's coming back in his revival, and what's going to be removed? The Constitution. A day, a year. Okay. So 1787 is the Constitution, is ratified. 1787 is also the beginning of the removal, believe it or not, of Justinian law. It is totally abolished by 1789. Napoleon helped do that. The Virginia Resolution, years after the beginning with internal conflict, was the final state to bring the Constitution to fulfillment. It's also the first year that we have a ship called the USS Constitution. 1814 is the end of the War of 1812 and paves the way for the destiny of America for 30 years. So all of this is tied together. Everything is tied together with these dynasties and what was taking place. So for the next 30 years, becomes the manifestation of America of destiny. So we go from sea to sea, eventually become 50 states. Isn't that incredible? I mean, when you put all the pieces together, you put the kingdoms together and the dynasties, but then you get to know why. All right, so now let's begin to move on because I will run a little bit late. So in 30 years, we change the size. All right, so now, tracking the first five heads of the scarlet beast of Revelation aligns historically to the prophetic biblical embedding of 1,260 days as years of Daniel 7 and Revelation 12. Everything perfectly fits. So now, the sixth head, we're just going to bring you into the induction now, and then I'll be bringing this to a close. The sixth head, the Italian-German Unification Pact of 1870, the sixth head becomes back into power, later connected through Mussolini and Hitler's axis. The axis began 1929 through 1945. The seventh head is the last revival of the Roman Empire, which would have 10 national rulers under a single pact. Remember the horns? Says they haven't received power yet? That will be part of the seventh. Revelation 13:15 says this, and he gave power to give life to the image of the beast. Who? All right, this is the second beast in Revelation 13. Who is that to give power to the beast? You're beginning to see that already with the Pope. Remember 2015, what did he do? He came to America. He met before the entire world at the UN. He laid an agenda out to be accomplished by 2030. He began to bring to life the Holy Roman Revival. Did it begin in 2015? I don't know. It seems to have that bearing. That when we look back in historic times, we'll see that the Roman Revival began in 2015. Or is it 2022, next year? The Italian-German unification began in 1817. Just let me give you a couple of quick things to bring this to a close. That was the first of two major events reestablishing the beast. All right? That's taking advantage of the fact that France, which was the country responsible for the guarding of the Papal States, was distracted by the involvements of the Franco-Prussian War, 1870 and 71. The Italian army moved into Rome. And that year, Rome and the papacy became states were incorporated into Italy. So while France was distracted, Italy came in and took over Rome again. It was coming back together. All that was coming back together. Who was the guy who was in charge? The Iron Man of Germany, Leopold von Bismarck. It's interesting. Why is that important for this unification? And why is he important? He was notable for convoking the first Vatican Council in 1868 for the permanent loosing of the papal control of the papal states, which took place in 1870 in the Kingdom of Italy. The control was eventually returned to the Vatican Council in 1929 in the Lateran Treaty. Now, why is this guy important, and what has that got to do with the seventh? Let's begin to look at that real quick. The Lateran Treaty, also called the Lateran Pact, was the Vatican became an independent state. Remember, in 554, you had an independent state, the Vatican, and the Roman government. The two have to work together. The Vatican state had to be independent for the woman to ride the beast. It can't be controlled. It has to be in control. 1870, that began. It began to be locked in 1929. So now, let me leave you with this interesting piece right now. This is interesting when you begin to see this. We brought this out again in Holy Roman Revival, so this is not new if you've been here for the last 8 years. Theodore von Gutenberg, he descended from royalty. His grandfather and his mother's grandfather was the late German Count of von Kuba, the Count of the Baron von Gutenberg, who were the House of Elst. The House of Elst has been in existence from 1100. It is the only house in Europe that has a continuous dynasty of the same families. It has never been conquered. It has never been taken over. It has never been bombed. It's as if Satan has kept this place protected and locked up to be brought back in at the same time. Do you remember I mentioned Napoleon? He had to marry somebody of the Habsburg dynasty. Well, he happened to marry someone also. All right? His wife, Stephanie. His wife, Stephanie, is also from royalty. The Baron's wife, meanwhile, is Stephanie, Countess of Bismarck-Schüttenhausen, the great-granddaughter of the Iron Chancellor, Otto von Bismarck. Isn't it interesting that as the five have gone, the sixth is and passed, and one is yet to come, that they're all possibly connected and tied in to the end time, all of them from German dynasty. The seventh head, the Roman Revival, said seven. There are seven kings, five fallen, one is yet to come, and he must continue for a short space. Next time, we'll talk about that, because I believe that we are in the midst of the revival of the seventh head of the Scarlet Beast in Revelation. I believe it began with the blood moon warnings of 2015. So I will do that in just a couple weeks when we do part three on the resurrecting the beast of Revelation. In the meantime, do your homework. Follow what's going on, and you're going to be amazed with what we put together next time. God be with you.